We will call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. I appreciate everybody being here. I know the hour is late. We are going to try to move as quickly as we can. Before we start, for the members, I'd like to make an announcement. Bethany tells me that everything from the committee yesterday was left in the packets, so you should have copies of amendments and bills for all the things that were on the agenda that we didn't get to. If not, there are additional new copies over on the wall under the clock, but we are environmentally friendly here and want to try to save as much as we can.
Mr. Chairman, I had a tuna sandwich in here, and I...
Thank you, Representative Atkins. That was delicious.
Oh, I thought everything was still in the
Members pack. Are encouraged to leave snacks at all times. With that, we're going to jump around on the agenda a little bit. We're going to do Representative David's bill, and if Erdahl is still here, Representative Erdahl is going to present Gunther's bill because both of those should be relatively quick. Then I am going to, if everybody in the committee is okay with it, I'm going to do 371, the more controversial PEEP bill, because we have some people that have come to testify from a long way away, so we want to do that as quickly as we can so they can get on the road. And with that, Representative David's, we will, do we have minutes yet? Representative Davids, why don't you go ahead and move your bill, and we'll start on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 1384, be recommended pass and sent to the General Register. Members, this bill arose out of the Petters case. It was brought to me by Big Brothers and Big Sisters of the Greater Twin Cities. In passage, is supported by the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. The bankruptcy trustee in this case is seeking to claw back money that Mr. Petters gave to charities. Under bankruptcy law, the trustee would be barred by the statute of limitations from going back more than 6 years. In this case, he is seeking to go back to the year 2000 by using the Minnesota Fraudulent Transfers Act. This act has no statute of limitations. This bill simply provides an exemption from the act for nonprofits to assure protection. The bankruptcy laws will still apply, but without this change, the trustee will be able to go back forever, and nonprofits would never be certain that they can spend funds that are donated to them. I have a couple witnesses that would like to give some very brief testimony. I'd like to start out with Mr. Phil Griffin.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And Mr. Griffin, as Representative Davids said, brevity is key this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I represent Big Brothers and Big Sisters of the Greater Twin Cities. And as Representative Davids described, Big Brothers and Big Sisters received a number of gifts from companies that were owned by Petters, and as a result, is involved in the action that the bankruptcy trustee is in right now. Under the bankruptcy laws, he's not able to go back any further than the statute of limitations, as the chair described, and we are seeking to try and amend the Fraudulent Transfers Act so that we can protect the money that we were given. This goes back quite a long ways. We think it's a simple solution to a fairly big problem for charities, and we have three witnesses, including our CEO, Gloria Luce, who we'd like to start with, Mr. Chairman, so I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. And Representative Davids, I understand that Representative Atkins has an amendment that you are and everyone is agreeable to. Do you want to do the amendment now, or do you want to have people speak and then do the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, why don't we get in the order that I'd like?
Okay.
Representative Atkins could present the amendment.
With that, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Davids. The amendment, and I'll read it and then briefly explain it, would be to line 3.17. And on line 3.17, after the word unless, we would insert the words within 60 days after the contribution. So to repeat once again, after the word unless on line 3.17, insert the words within 60 days after the contribution. I worked with the council for the charities on this. Representative Davids supports it. What it gets at was a concern that I raised, and Representative Davids, I give you a lot of credit for you. You came over on the House floor and we walked through the bill. Of course, he had me trapped in the corner so I couldn't escape. But
couldn't get around me, Mr. Chairman. You
got to quit carrying that sandwich around.
The concern that I raised was what happens if you have the situation where a donation is made 3 days ago or a week ago, and the charity doesn't want to give it back, but you know that you've got this elderly couple that's been, their life savings had been stolen. The charity hasn't spent the money yet. We know it's still there, and so I raised that concern, and I give a lot of credit to the charity folks because they said, "Well, how about a 60-day window? After that, there's probably some good likelihood the money may be spent or could have been spent. So we're not looking to have a look-back period or claw-back period that goes on for years. But 60 days seemed fair to them, seems fair to me. I think Representative David supported it, and I'd offer that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Members, any questions to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, this one's
Representative
for
Davids.
What was her name?
Millie.
Yeah, Millie.
Millie. Millie loves the amendment. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion amendment prevails. Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Davids, if you
Mr.
want to.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Gloria Lewis, President and CEO of Big Brothers and Big Sisters of the Greater Twin Cities.
Thank you, Mr. Davids.
Welcome, Ms. Lewis. Identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Yes. My name is Gloria Lewis. I am the President and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Greater Twin Cities. BBBS is the oldest mentoring organization in this state as well as in the country and has been providing services to Minnesota youth for more than 90 years. Each year we serve more than 3,200 young people through a variety of youth mentoring programs, including school-based and community-based and special services for our children of parents who are incarcerated. We have been recognized for our work. The Minnesota Office of Public Safety just nominated us for a National Criminal Justice Association Award as an excellent program. We received the Gold Star Awards from Big Brothers Big Sisters of America for program quality. And we have received the Mentoring Partnership of Minnesota's designation as an expert partner, among many other honors. Our programs have proven positive impacts upon young people we serve. Our results show a decrease in their use of alcohol and drugs, improved school attendance, better grades and social skills, and better relationships with families. I am here today in support of HF 1384. BBBS, as well as a number of other nonprofits, have been caught in the Petters Ponzi scheme. I would like to testify today about some of the factors related to this issue and its impact on BBBS and the children and families we serve. Over a dozen years, dating back to the 1990s, BBBS received relatively small contributions from a number of companies owned by Tom Petters, including Polaroid, Sun Country, and others. These gifts were in support of annual fundraising events, our gala, and golf tournaments. They added up to over $200,000 for BBBS. This is a significant amount to recover, and it will have a devastating impact upon the agency and our ability to fulfill our mission and serve families and children in need. This is because, historically, we have not maintained large reserves. Each year, we use the donations we receive, as our donors expect us to do, to address our mission of providing mentors for young people. Two, further, in several of the years in which these donations were received, we had an operating deficit. So all the funds received were immediately used to support our mission. We currently have more than 700 children on our waiting list who will be unable to be served with this recovery and other pending financial cuts. The contributions we received from Petters and his companies were accepted in good faith. We had no reason to suspect that these donations were fraudulent. The amounts were not out of line with other charitable contributions given for the same purposes, nor were there any indications anything was amiss. In general, charities do not conduct due diligence on each and every charitable donation. It would be extremely expensive and take away from our mission of providing service. This is also a very difficult time for charities, as funding from both the private and the public sector significantly down. We're facing some severe financial challenges in fiscal year 2012 as a result of a cut in annual funding from United Way, the termination of an annual corporate sponsorship out of our national office, which impacts our local funding. The fact that Congress zeroed out the Mentoring Children of Prisoners program in the federal budget, which ends a three-year grant after only 1 year. We are already anticipating a budget decrease of 15 to 20% next year. We are very fortunate at BBBS that one of our board members, Bob McCullum, is representing us in this issue pro bono. Other charities are not as fortunate. While the legislature must protect the victims of a fraudulent scheme, those interests must be balanced against the interest in preserving the ability for nonprofits to raise funds and serve the critical issues of our communities. The possibility of a recovery of charitable donations minimizes our ability to raise public dollars in support of our mission, increasing our need to rely upon government support to meet critical community needs. Without a change in the Fraudulent Transfer Act, we are in a position where the bankruptcy trustee will be in a very strong position to ask for recovery of every dollar ever given to BBBS. In that case, the court will create a new class of victims in this Ponzi scheme, our children and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just bring up Susan Brown just for the record to show her support, and then I'd like to bring up Mr. McCollum just to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Ms. Brown, please proceed. Identify yourself for the tape, and please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Susie Brown. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. We're a 2,000-member statewide organization of nonprofits. And I would just like to offer our support for this bill as amended. We see this as an appropriate remedy to an infrequent but very real problem for nonprofit organizations in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Robert McCullum, just for if we have any questions of members, otherwise we can proceed.
Members, any questions? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCullum?
McCullum.
Sorry. It's so long since I got involved in contested bankruptcies that since I've been here, I haven't had any. Can we do this retroactive, this type of a thing, and have it take effect back retroactively was my first question. And can we define this? And I can't remember in the bankruptcy code, but I'm obviously that preempts anything we do. Is there nothing that we can do all of this and have it take effect? Or
yes, I believe so. We've done the research on that, and it can affect existing cases because the right doesn't vest until such time as the case has reached its conclusion. So we can effectuate this, and it will apply to existing claims in the Petters case.
So Representative Mullery.
Wow. So we can change a lot of things that...
It would be helpful to the nonprofits.
Okay. Other questions, members? If not, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing nobody, Representative Davids, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion that House File 1384, as amended, be recommended passed and sent to the General Register.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Congratulations. Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
Thank
Chairman
you for your
members.
Testifiers. Nice
thank
job.
Thank you very much.
Representative Stensrud, have you had a chance to review the minutes from yesterday's meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move those minutes.
Thank you. Representative Stensrud moves the minutes from the April 27th meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Stensrud. Representative Erdahl, standing in for Representative Gunther. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the committee. Thank you for pitch hitting for Representative Gunther. We all are hoping that he is feeling better and back with us soon. And Representative Gunther already knows this, but the motto, especially at quarter to seven in the evening, the motto of this committee is brevity. So thank you, Representative Erdahl. I understand you have a delete all amendment. Would you like to put that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It will be brief. Because
before we do that, we'll
I'm due somewhere at 7:45. 6:45.
Well, we'll try to get you there. Representative Anderson, would you move House File 611 for Representative Erdahl, please? Representative Anderson moves House File 611. Representative Erdahl, please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I believe Racino was a jobs bill. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the wrong one. That's the wrong Gunther bill.
Representative Erdahl, since you're a little confused, we will. Why don't we move your DE amendment to get the bill in the shape that Representative Gunther would like it to be in? Representative Anderson, will you move the delete all amendment?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Anderson moves the delete all. Representative Erdahl to the delete all amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wally will talk to the amendment.
Okay. We'll speak to the amendment, and then members can take questions, and we'll adopt the amendment, assuming we adopt it, and then move from there. Mr. Wally, please identify yourself from the record and fire away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Wally, representing Minnesota Community Capital Fund. The amendment is the product of work that took place after the bill moved through the Jobs Committee. We worked with the House research staff. It's just technical and clarifying language. There's about 7 or 8 different changes, moving definitions in the proper alphabetical order, making clarification to narrow the eligible uses of loan funds, changing some word order to provide clarification of intent, changing references to state to commissioner, which is appropriate, changing some words to make clear the parties who would be involved in the financial transactions, and then in the most significant changes on page 3, where we have subdivisions 4, 5, and 6 now, we haven't changed substantively what those provisions relate to, but they were all thrown into one subdivision in the original bill, and so we've clarified the intent by breaking those 3 concepts into 3 separate subdivisions, starting at line 3.12 through 3.24, and that's really the substance of the delete everything amendment. It's more technical and clarifying.
Thank you, Mr. Wally. Members, any questions about the delete all? Seeing none, we will vote on the adoption of the delete all amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The delete all is adopted. Representative Erdahl to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you have indicated, I'm standing in for Representative Gunther tonight. He'll be returning next week. Representative Gunther's bill, House File 611, will address capital needs of Minnesota small businesses as they attempt to regain their footing coming out of the recession. The financial collapse of 2008 resulted in the tightening of our credit markets. The loan guarantee proposed in this legislation would restore a valuable tool for business financing in Minnesota. The Minnesota Community Capital Fund has successfully provided subordinated debt financing for small businesses for the past 8 years. The mechanism for recapitalization of the fund was to package and sell their loans on the secondary market. The loan guarantee proposed here would restore the ability to sell these loans on the secondary market and allow for the continual recapitalization of this source of business lending. I have Scott Martin from the Minnesota Community Capital Fund, who can explain a bit more about this proposal once the witness has testified. We'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. If you could identify yourself for the tape, let us know what we should know about this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Martin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Community Capital Fund. We're a nonprofit, private nonprofit corporation made up primarily of local governments, electric utilities, and other nonprofits around Minnesota who provide financing to Main Street businesses or businesses of any kind. But effectively, we're doing small business lending, working in partnership with banks. Usually the bank is the bank of the borrower, and we come in and fill a gap. So we're commonly referred to as a gap lender or an economic development lender. As Representative Erdahl said, we've had 8 years of history in making loans to small businesses, but when the financial crisis hit in 2008, it hit us very hard. We depend upon our capital coming from Wall Street. We bring in access to capital for small businesses from sources like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs. You can imagine any large institution were actively buying our loans prior to the financial crisis of a couple of years ago. Since that time, the investors have been on the sidelines, and subsequently, as a lender, an active lender to small businesses in Minnesota, we've been on the force of the sidelines as well. The proposed bill, House File 611, would provide for a state trust fund to set up a loan guarantee program that would help provide some credit support for our lending activities, again in partnerships with banks. It provides that the banks provide at least 50% of the financing for any financing for a small business, with a limit of $1.5 million per deal. It provides for our loans to be guaranteed at a 70% level, therefore making them marketable to the secondary market once again, where we get our capital from. The leveraging capacity that this brings to small-town community banks, to small-town businesses, is really, it's not infinite, but it's dramatic. Our history has shown us with the funds that we've provided on the street to date, some $35 million, for every $15,000 that we've invested in debt, subordinated debt, to the small businesses that we support, there's been one job created, one job for $15,000. Typically in a small business administration loan, and we're different than small business, I can get into that if you'd like, but the small business administration is looking at a minimum of one job for $50,000. So our leveraging has really been significant. And I can tell you right now that although it's been fairly quiet on the demand side in last year in 2009, demand is picking up, small businesses are looking for capital, banks want to help their customers, but they're either unable to because of regulatory changes, but regulatory environment becoming much more difficult on the banking side, or just plain access to capital that banks have and risk management. So we can come in, fill the gap, and we get the financing to the small businesses that they need when they need it at a fair market price.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Members, any questions? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. First of all, at the jobs, you said that you do working capital. Has that been changed at all since by this amendment? And then is there any other major changes than this amendment from at the last committee?
No,
Mr.
The
Martin.
Amendments are really quite technical. No, we finance working capital, buildings, acquisition, building expansion, new construction, as well as business equipment, basically anything a bank does.
Representative Mullery, does that answer your
question? Yes.
Any other questions, members? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I don't know, what was the motion to move this bill to what committee?
I don't think we added a committee to where we think it should go. We're having some discussion about that right now, and
okay. We're
asking your opinion as the chair of the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very wise decision. I'm looking at the House rules, and we're a little maybe overprotective in the tax screen, make sure that everything that has a fee or a tax increase or whatever comes through taxes. At first I looked at this, I thought it probably should, but now I don't. According to House rules, it really doesn't need to, and the reason is on House Rules 4.10, Item C, it talks about bill with substantial impact on tax revenues and goes on. And it says, for purposes of this paragraph, tax includes any fee, charge, exaction, which I have no clue what that is, or assessment of primary purpose of which is to recover direct or indirect costs incurred by the state or other governmental entity or as a payment or benefit received. So this money would go directly to pay for the program itself, so this would not need to go to tax committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rudolph.
I think Representative Gunther wants to go right to the General Register.
I'm sure he does.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We appreciate that kind of clarity. Representative Atkins.
I think, and I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Davids to a point, but then in the next sentence, if it's a guarantee, if it operates the way that it potentially could have to operate. I don't really care, Representative Davids, but I think Representative Lencheski will care greatly. And it will likely come up as a, you know, if it just pays for the program and nothing ever costs anybody anything, but if it comes up short for any reason, that kind of, it just, I don't know, it's up to you, you're the chair, but
I'm guessing it'll probably be the kind of thing that Representative Lencheski would probably make a motion to have come to you anyway.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, that's good advice from Representative Atkins. I think at this point I'd say General Register. I'd be happy to talk to Representative Lencheski. But I think this one would go under House Rules 4.10, paragraph C. And you may be correct, but I will be happy to talk to Representative Lencheski. She seems to have a big magnet out there that catches all these things, and I'd be happy to talk to her.
Well, Representative Davids and Representative Atkins, because we are the Peace in the Valley Committee, what if we send it to Ways and Means? Then it doesn't go immediately to taxes or to the floor. I've either made you both happy or made you both mad, or one of each.
I like the chair of that committee a lot better.
Well, she's a lot better chair.
Are you even listening?
Yeah, she's a lot better chair. I mean, and it could go to either. I don't think it needs to go to either. So it's certainly up to the committee, but I don't feel I need to see this bill.
Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think your idea is right to send it to Ways and Means, because I think it does have to go to there, and I think that probably Representative Davids is correct from the little I remember on that issue, but I think think it does need to go.
Well, why don't we send it to Ways and Means? We'll amend the motion to send it to Ways and Means, and we'll talk to Representative Lencheski, and she and Representative Davids can talk, and if they decide they need to see it in taxes, then Representative Davids can request it. With that, Representative Anderson, if you want to renew your motion that House File 611 as amended, oh, I thought it was Sarah that made the motion. Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 611, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Congratulations, Representative Gunther. With that, Representative Davids, if you want to come up here and... Oh, Representative Anderson,
come up. Go ahead.
Oh, heck, I'll do it.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 371. I will be brief. This is the first of the two bills that we're doing tonight. This one is more controversial. We moved it around on the agenda because we have some people that have traveled here to testify against it that have come a long ways and have to go a long ways to get home. I will keep my comments brief. I originally was approached to carry this bill and with the idea that what's happening is we have a lot of people around the state, a lot of school districts are having their teachers go into PEEP instead of the what has been more traditional, at least lately, with the the co-ops that they were using. And my concern was for PEEP, that this is not what this was designed for, and we didn't want to have such huge amounts of people going into it. I think it greatly changes the program, and I was just trying to make sure that things were done the right way. I think to be fair, and we'll let Ms. Schwab testify, I think to be fair, there is a lot of opposition. It passed out of the Government Operations Committee earlier, and there was a lot of discussion on both sides of the issue, and I have met with both sides since then, and I hope that I was hoping that we were reaching more of a compromise on it, but we'll see tonight. And with that, members, I'll turn it over to Ms. Schwab, and we'll get started.
Ms. Schwab, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Oh, sorry.
My apologies, Madam Chair and Ms. Kelleher.
Very proud of my new last name. Well, members, it's a pleasure to be with you and to support Representative Hoppe's House File 371. The school boards are responsible for making school district budget balance and benefit costs that are in line with state and federal financial support. This past year, we've had to face a shift of state revenues by $1.8 billion, and 140 districts from around the state have had to handle short-term aid shifts from the state to balance the state's budget. this bill addresses a problem that would not allow the exclusive bargaining unit to make unilateral changes in the aggregate value of insurance benefits. And that's why we're concerned about the present law. The present law makes employee groups make unilateral decisions to move into the public employees insurance program. MSBA has become aware through previous testimony by Education Minnesota that at least 220 school employee groups in Minnesota are currently seeking health insurance bids from PEEP. Now, once again, this is something these bargaining units do without school board consent on their own to elicit a bid, and we are not included in the planning. Though PEEP might provide better coverage at a better price for school employees, the people that are paying the bills and who are responsible for balancing the budget are not even aware of what the bids entail. We don't know which employee groups in these districts are considering moving to PEEP or whether or not it includes all insurance eligible groups. House File 371 requires that employee groups in a particular school district get on the same page with their school boards by majority vote and have a commitment to join PEEP. This will prevent problems that are caused by the present law where a teacher group may leave a district health plan and leave the other employee groups behind. More importantly, when it comes to PEEP enrollment, this bill requires collective agreement. Since school districts are responsible for paying the bills, it's important we have a hand in the decision that brings the benefit costs. With that, Madam Chairman, I will stand and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Keller. Member, any questions of Ms. Kelleher? If not, please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll be very brief. The League supports the reforms outlined in House File 371. As you just heard from Ms. Kelleher, others have articulated concerns and the issues with employee groups unilaterally moving into public employee insurance program, or PEEP. This has been a concern for some cities as well, and we concur with the issues already expressed. Specifically, cities as employers should have a voice in determining what coverage they will offer to their employees. If you look at the issue in reverse, the city could not unilaterally decide to move a union group to a different plan or to a different carrier without negotiating changes in the aggregate value of benefits. We believe House File 371 levels the playing field by bringing both parties to the table so that this type of change would be negotiable, or at least mutual. In closing, I'd encourage your support for House File 371, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Members, any questions of Ms. Finn? If not, thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to testify in favor of the bill?
Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, maybe I'll go ahead and offer the A2 amendment right now, and we can have Mr. Walseth come and speak in favor of it. And then Ms. Allswager and others, I think, want to come and speak against the amendment. I will offer the A2 amendment, and my intent here, and Mr. Walseth can explain it better than I, but hopefully I don't get this backwards, but as it currently is in the bill, it would be only the school boards that would get the final decision, and my intent was to change it by putting in language of the appropriate bargaining unit so that it wouldn't be just the school board deciding, and hoping that that made the bill more fair. And I'll let Mr. Walseth speak to that and then let others come and tell you where they think I went wrong.
Mr. Walseth, welcome.
Madam Chair and members, Sam Walseth, I represent the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, who do pool insurance for a vast number of local governments across the state, including about 260-odd school districts, which is about 40% of the school employee lives covered. The bill before you, without the amendment, is kind of a swing from one extreme to another. In our opinion, the current law is a unilateral authority for the employees to make a decision to go into this program. The bill before you shifts that to what would probably be a veto authority for the management side of the equation to deny the ability of the union to go into PEEP. What the A2 amendment does is say it's a decision that needs to be made between the eligible employer and the exclusive representative, so it would move it to back toward the negotiating table where they have to mutually discuss and agree on it. So we think it's a fairer way than as the bill is currently before the committee, which is a shift from one extreme to the other. This will kind of balance things out between the two sides that they have to mutually discuss and agree.
Members, any questions for Mr. Walseth? Thank you. And anybody wishing to testify opposed to the bill? Please come forward. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. And I might recommend, in the interest of time, if both Mr. Granger and I can testify and then stand for questions if you have them. I think that might be a little more efficient. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Granger. I currently work for Education Minnesota. Prior to that, I taught school in Detroit Lakes for over 30 years. During that time, I was heavily involved with the insurance, health insurance for the employees of Detroit Lakes as a member of the Insurance Advisory Committee, the local one. But I also was involved at the state level with Education Minnesota as the chairperson for statewide health insurance. I served on the plan design committee that the legislature funded to take a look at statewide health insurance, and I also served on the Lakes Country Service Co-op Insurance Advisory Committee, excuse me. So I've had a little experience with working with the insurance at a local level. I will tell you that as we went through this process, and as I was on the Insurance Advisory Committee for the Service Co-op, Alexandria was the first to leave, to use the law. They left because they felt that that there was needs that they could be met by PEEP. And in fact, they left before the pool started. And they found that the plan that PEEP had put together was, in fact, very, very helpful for them. They experienced lower rates each year than the Service Co-op was able to provide. And then when we found that the statewide health insurance was not going to come into existence, we decided that maybe we should try to create the voluntary pools, as we had been told in the legislature as we went through. So that's what we did. And in 2008, we created the first pool that actually came into existence in 2009. Detroit Lakes was one of those. And in the process of doing that, I spent a lot of time talking with not only the members in Detroit Lakes, but in other locals that ultimately formed that pool. What we explained to them was that the PEEP plan, which is one phase of that is the Advantage plan, which is the state health insurance plan that the legislators have an option to use also, has built into it long-term goals that actually create a very good cost savings. It also has something else in it that's it's called excuse me. I lost my thought. Sorry. Thank you. It's called managed competition, and it also created for within the against the Service Co-op, so to speak, it created competition. And we thought that was when you have real direct competition, things absolutely do work well. And we saw that, and I'll explain in a minute how that worked recently. Detroit Lakes, as I said, went with the pool, and I tried to talk to the business manager and the superintendent. Both at the time, and neither one was interested. The business manager actually serves on the Service Co-op's advisory committee, as do I. In the case of the 2009 pool, every one of the locals that I tried to talk to when it came to the superintendents and the business managers or board members, they politely said, no, thank you. We couldn't get them to be interested in what we were doing. But as we educated our members, they became to realize that this was a good plan. And in fact, it really did come to fruition that way, because the first year that Detroit Lakes went with PEEP, they experienced an 8.75% increase in health care. While that sounds like a lot, it was under 10%, and that's something that we hadn't seen in a while. The Service Co-op at that time experienced an 11.4% increase. The next year, which is coming up with this one, Detroit Lakes experienced a negative 2% increase. The pool itself actually had an average decrease of 6.6%, with at least one local in there experiencing a 23% decrease in their rates. That's real money. It's true that, and it continued on with the 2011 pool that we're actively trying to create. As I go out to locals and talk to them, the members are interested. They want to know what's going on. They want to educate themselves with this. And when I go to the administration, whether it's the business managers or the superintendents, typically they're not interested. And I will tell you that in my experience with Lakes Country Service Co-op Insurance Advisory Committee, the majority of those people are either the business managers or the superintendents of those locals. They don't have a vested interest like we do in finding ways to save money. They have an interest in continuing the status quo, and it's much easier for them to do so if they stay with what they have. PEEP saves money. It saves money in the short term, it saves money in the long term. It has created competition at a level that the service co-ops have not had to experience in a long time. Lakes Country Service Co-op right now is putting out bids right now that have decreases in them. I was just up in Ely yesterday, and the Northeast Service Co-op is putting out quotes right now that have, in some cases, have a 15% decrease. They have not seen that in those locals. No one can remember the last time they saw decreases like that. In fact, the one school I was at Ely, the year before, they had a 15% increase. And this year now they're experiencing a quote from that service co-op of a 15% decrease. And I think I'll pass to Jan for after that.
Ms. Alschwager?
Madam Chair, Jan Alschwager, Education Minnesota. And I also want to speak to the amendment. The amendment doesn't really change anything. The bill as written allowed the school district or the school board to not go in, to decide not to go in, or the employee group. And at the end of the contract year with PEEP, either party could terminate the contract at the end of the year. What we've done here is said that it's subject to collective bargaining. That means that if the school board decides they don't want to do it, they can just say no. But what have we done? I want to say a little bit more about what Jim was talking about. We have tried for years to get a statewide mandatory health insurance pool. What did you say? And Representative Davids was a wonderful author for our bill. Thank you for your work. We tried hard to get that passed. And what happened? You said, or the people who were in the legislature before, it should be voluntary and competitive. So that's what we did. We sought bids from PEEP. 220 districts sought bids from PEEP. As a result of that, now the competition is trying, they're trying to stifle the competition with this bill. Are the timelines of the PEEP process that we are in right now is that on May 30th, the decision has to be made. I do not know of any school district that is going to have a collective bargaining agreement done at that time. And this amendment would say that you have to have it collectively bargained and agreed to, meaning that all the work that we have done to get a voluntary competitive bid through PEEP would be done. I want to review some other the savings that we have seen. The Duluth School District had a bid from Health Partners of 15.8%. They thought it was too high. They went to PEEP. PEEP gave them a bid of 6%. As a result, Health Partners came back with a 6% bid. The Duluth teachers decided to go with PEEP. And now they have, in the projected costs, from June 30th of 2011 to July 1st of 2011, and this is a straight district savings compared to what they had budgeted, $1.7 million because they switched from Health Partners and they went to PEEP. And some might say, well, we need to have the school board have some kind of say. I heard Ms. Kelleher say that PEEP might have a better plan for less money, but they have the responsibility to deal with the budget. I'm really wondering what is wrong with a better plan for less money, because that's what we are seeing. You've heard about black holes in education. Where's the money going? We can tell you it is going to insurance. All Education Minnesota is asking for is the ability for our teachers, our school employees, to get honest, transparent bids. So why is it a problem? One might think that it would be a school board member would say, yes, let's go ahead and get a bid, or let's not because we have whatever reasons for making these statements. Under the service co-op law, I will read from you about the governing board. It says a majority of the members of the service co-op board of directors shall be current members of school boards of participating school districts. The service co-op boards are the boards that set the premiums for school employees. So you have a majority of school board members now setting the premiums for our members. In addition, there are superintendents on the service co-op board. Sometimes there's a few teachers. In fact, Jim was on a service co-op board. And we found out through a fluke, Jim is on the service co-op board. You would think he knows everything about what's happening on the service co-op board. But we found out that the service co-ops were giving money back to districts. And maybe I can defer to Jim to tell us how his district found out.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Granger.
Thank you. It was rather serendipitous. My president at the time was sitting in the office of the superintendent and the business manager when the one of the agents for the service co-op walked in with a check and handed it to them and was very proud to do that. And through the discussion, it came up that what the check was for. It became obvious, as Denise, the president, said, that it was rather an uncomfortable situation because suddenly they had to explain themselves as to what it was. And it's actually was what's called a rebate. What it was is it was an overage. When the RSR and RBNR accounts are full, and there's a calculation that's created that that figures out when Detroit Lakes had paid more in their premiums than what was necessary to continue those two accounts, it's rebated back to the district, unbeknownst to anybody but the district. We happened to have somebody there at the time. We contested it, and I would tell you that we're in the process now of finalizing the grievance, and the money will be shared back with not only the district but with the people who put that money in, the employees of school district number 22.
So, Ms. Alschwager.
Madam Chair, as a result of us learning that school districts were being refunded our members' insurance premium contributions, we did a public data request in 2009 and 2010. Some of your districts are affected. I won't read all of them because there are way too many. And I would guess there's probably some we still don't even know about. Watertown Mayor School District was rebated $128,248. Wadena, $30,000. Fisher Public Schools, who they have very few employees, $21,000. Battle Lake, $10,000. Lake Park Audubon, $55,000. Detroit Lake, $75,000. There's more here. Stuartville, $80,000. Detroit Lakes, the second year, $168,000. I can go on and on. Barnum, $123,977.72. We would not know about any of this money that was going back to district had the Detroit Lakes Teachers Union president not been in the office. In addition, The service co-ops have testified in previous years that they fund programs for the school district. Knowledge Bowl, Teacher of the Year, Spelling Bee. Where do they get that money? From our members' insurance premiums. We believe that any insurance premiums that are coming, whether they're from the district or from our members, should be for the insurance product or the administration of the insurance, not for funding programs that should be coming out of the general education formula. Madam Chair, in summary, it sounds like it might be, you know, a good idea to have some kind of negotiations or something like that. But clearly there are practices that are going on in the school, in the service co-ops, and who knows what else is out there, that make it impossible or unlikely, I should say, to have this process be honest and ethical and transparent and accurate, or with accountability. Again, we would not know about this except for just a fluke that happened. And so we are begging you, please, let us get a handle on the insurance costs. If this works, they will continue to do it. If it doesn't work, they'll come back. But this bill, the way it is written, will effectively kill all competition that we have created because we went out for a PEEP bid.
Thank you, Ms. Alschweiger. Members, questions? We have Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. One is for Mr. Pender and one is for Mr. Granger, was it?
Yes.
First of all, to Mr. Pender, it kind of sparked my interest when I heard that Health Partners had a 16% increase in their bid. PEEP comes in at 6%, and then Health Partners comes back in at 6. Haven't we violated like about 83 laws here? Wouldn't that fall under the illegal rebating statutes? Because I've got an independent agency with many companies. No, that's not a good example. Let's say Millie's buying car insurance. And State Farm comes in at $500 for 6 months. And then I come in at $400 for 6 months, and then State Farm comes back in at $400. You're going to jail.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I think you're right that people would go to jail if they had talked with each other and colluded about it. But if, you know, I mean, it's possible that this is the competitive market, or that Health Partners thought maybe they'd, you know, made an error in their calculations, and when they heard about the lower bid and they redid their calculations, and lo and behold, they could come up with a lower price. In other words, I don't think from what you described that there's enough evidence to say that there was illegal price fixing, but it would be certainly, you know, something that would invite investigation and finding out more about it.
Well, Madam Chair,
David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Pender, if Health Partner comes in at 16 and they find out that PEEP was at 6, I mean, it's no coincidence that Health Partners came back at 6, but let's just say they came in at 16, PEEP is 6, they find out about it, they come back and it's 6. Would that be illegal?
Mr. Pender.
Representative Davids, could you repeat that scenario?
Health Partners comes in with a 16% increase in their bid. PEEP comes in with a 6% increase. Health Partners finds out about it, and so they come back with another offer at 6%. That would be violating rebating statutes.
Mr.
Is that
Pender.
Correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I don't think so. That's meeting competition.
Representative Davids.
Again, if they didn't collude.
Could you, Mr. Pender, grab me the statutes on rebating in the insurance code so we can move on here? If you could grab the statute, I'd like to read it. The other issue is questions to Mr. Granger. So when your school district got the rebate, that money went back for the teacher's health insurance. Is that correct?
Initially, no. What happened is the district received the money, and
through conversations, we came to realize that there probably had been other rebates prior to it that we did not know about, and so we filed a grievance with them because they didn't think that they should have to rebate that money to us, and through the grievance process, we negotiated it out, and both parties came to an agreement that it should be a shared amount going back. And so June 30th, the Detroit Lakes teachers will get anywhere from, some of them will get as little as $40 in a check and some as much as $1,800 rebated back to them in a June 30th check.
Representative Davis.
Madam Chair, Mr. Granger, are you aware of any other school districts where the money didn't go back for the teachers' health insurance, went for other things?
Mr. Granger.
I'm hesitating because we know where money, where school districts were rebated monies, but we don't know what happened to the monies necessarily. I think it would be fair to say that not all the rebates went back to the teachers, because as I've talked to other districts, other locals who have had rebates and asked them, did you get any money back? Their answer, anecdotally, is no.
Well, Madam Chair, this is quite troubling to me. Mr. Pender, on another issue here, we're using the word rebating. Now, you can't do that, but are we using the correct term? You can pay a dividend if there's like a mutual company. You could pay a dividend if there's profits. The dividends go back to the policyholder. Where are we on the issue of, I don't like that, rebating is illegal. We're saying there's rebating going on. Or is it actually, more technically, a dividend, which would be legal?
Representative Davis, we also have somebody from Health Partners here, though, that I think could maybe address some of that, too. But Mr. Pender?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davis, I think we'd need to know more about the transaction, about what agreement or non-agreement there was about, you know, what would be paid back and why, under what circumstances.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Cox, did you want to come to the table? Welcome. If you could please state your name for the record.
Thanks. I'm Barbara Cox from Health Partners. And I just wanted to address Ms. Halswager's testimony about the Duluth situation, and this is something that Ms. Halswager and I discussed yesterday because of the concern about the cost differential. And I want to clarify that the reason that the cost went down for the bid from Health Partners is that Health Partners matched the leaner benefits that PEEP was going to provide the teachers. So the lower cost is in proportion to the fewer benefits that the teachers would receive under the PEEP plan. When Health Partners matched those benefits, the Health Partners price was actually lower than the PEEP price in Duluth, and the Duluth teachers chose the PEEP plan anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Cox. Members, any questions for Ms. Cox or Ms. Halswager or Mr. Granger? All right. Representative Muller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could she also address the, obviously, Representative Davids knows more about the insurance statutes, but could Ms. Cox address his other issue?
Ms. Cox?
Madam Chair, representatives, I don't think I can address that other issue. I would defer to our sales staff, and I'd have to get information to the committee.
Okay. Representative Driscoll? O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having had some experience in the industry, three things. One, Representative Davids is just spot on when he says that rebating is an illegal activity in the state of Minnesota. Agents or companies that engage in this practice are violating state statute and putting themselves at risk with their professional licensure. Rebating is any inducement given by an agent or a company to do business with that particular agent and or insurer in the state of Minnesota. Dividends are paid in two ways in the state of Minnesota, from a stock company or from a mutual company. And in the case of most, if not all, health insurers in the state of Minnesota, they are going to be mutuals and or nonprofits. So that could be where some of the funding is coming back on this. I think that the third point that Ms. Cox made is extremely important. And that is the fact that when you were buying, you went in, if I could use an auto dealer example, you went and said, tell me what it's going to cost to buy a Cadillac. Here's the price. Well, what about a Chevy? And so you were looking at two different types of of coverages with different types of premiums attached to those. And as a result, there was obviously going to be a reduction in the amount of premiums that were paid. So we weren't comparing apples to apples from what I'm hearing.
Thank you. And if I could just make one more point, the other point, and this goes to the next copy bill, House File 834, is that the P program doesn't pay premium taxes and the assessments that support the MCHA fund. And that's another reason that PEEP is able to provide some of these at a lower cost, because they don't have to pay those taxes and assessments.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Davis might want to listen to this also, but back when I worked for a public agency, and there was, we got our insurance through the City of Minneapolis Fund, and I sat on a board or a committee because they were going to get an RFP for their insurance for the next 3 years. And I'm not going to name the names of the insurance companies because they're local ones, but the one company that currently had the health insurance plan for the City of Minneapolis put their RFP in, and it was much higher than one of the other RFPs that we got. And as we were looking through this and through the discussions, that company came to us, the committee, and said, well, you can't switch from us because we gave you a lowball price 3 years ago so we'd get the business, and we haven't made up that money yet. And so, therefore, you have to stay with us so we can make our profit that we were supposed to make, even though we gave you a lowball price 3 years ago. Needless to say, everybody on the committee was shocked. They did switch to another company because it was a better price for the city and for the employees. So I don't know if that's considered rebating or what that is, but I mean, it's just for them to admit that, I think we were all kind of taken aback of that.
Okay. Representative Davis.
Madam Chair, lowballing isn't rebating. Lowballing is stupid.
Okay, members, any other questions? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The testifier from Health Partners, a quick question. You said that PEEP doesn't pay MSHA fund, correct, and we have a bill coming up on that. Do the service co-ops pay the MSHA assessment?
Ms. Cox.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, I believe they do not.
Representative Davis.
Thank you.
Representative Hoppe, did you want to renew your motion?
Well, yes, Madam Chair, and thank you. And a lot of the issues that are addressed are important issues. And I think if there are rebates coming back, they should be fairly go to the people that are paying them, both the teachers and the districts. I don't know how widespread that is, but these are issues that aren't addressed in the bill. The bill might have implications on those. And Ms. Allswager, I think, would tell you that it will. But if those issues are there, they were already there, and the bill won't impact that. And I think at some point, not tonight, we need to have a larger discussion about all of these issues. And I'm committed to continuing to do that after tonight. I don't want to kill competition. I'm hoping that the A2 amendment, I thought it was a step in the right direction. And I'm hoping that there are other things that we can do to this bill to try to make the competition, maybe put in a yearly time limit or something. But it was not meant to stop collective bargaining. It was meant to enhance collective bargaining and help. And it was well-intentioned, and I will continue to work with everybody and see if we can make that work out.
Okay. Well, Representative Hoppe renews his motion to the A2 amendment to House File 371. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment prevails, and we are on House File 371. Any closing remarks, Representative Hoppe?
Well, Mr. Rice is coming up, Madam Chair. There's one other thing that I wanted to do to the bill, and this doesn't have anything to do with education, and I believe this is the same thing that was done in the Senate, and if I'm wrong about that, I'm sure Mr. Rice will straighten it out. And I didn't prepare an amendment because what I'm going to do is delete Section 2 from the bill, which starts on page 2, line 2.33. And the reason we want to take that out is we don't want to have this bill apply to law enforcement, and Mr. Rice can give you the specifics, but I don't believe there are many law enforcement units that are included in PEEP. And I believe from the Senate, from what happened in the Senate with this bill and this amendment, that everybody's okay with it.
Mr. Rice?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hoppe. Yes, I'm Brian Rice. I represent the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. And Section 2 in this bill is really different than the PEEP issue. Section 2 is a provision that allows public employees, if you particularly on page 3, what Section 2 does, I'll call the committee's attention to page 3, lines 3.7 to 3.13. And right now, under Minnesota law, if you have a former employee, until a former employee reaches age 65, in other words, if they retire early, they're required to be pooled with the active members of an employee group for health insurance purposes, for the rating purposes, and obviously under Minnesota law, it's the policy of the state of Minnesota to have early retirement for police and firefighters. It's age 55 is the assumed or the normal age of retirement for police and fire. They normally do retire about that age, maybe a little bit older. If they retire, they're eligible under Minnesota law to continue to get health insurance from their employer. They have to pay the rate themselves. But if they're pooled separate, if they're pooled with the other group, insurance is reasonably affordable. If they're pooled on their own, it becomes much more expensive, and therefore, even defeating the ability to retire early or to leave at the normal age of retirement. So, Representative Hoppe is correct. This it's been removed out of the Senate bill, and on behalf of the police and firefighters in the state, we would appreciate support for Representative Hoppe's motion.
Okay. Members, any questions for Mr. Rice or Representative Hoppe? Okay. Representative Hoppe renews his motion to remove Section 2 of House File 371. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment passes. Representative Hoppe, to your bill. Any other comments?
I kind of made closing comments before. We'll continue to work on it. I appreciate everybody's time and support.
Okay. Members, we're going to vote on House File 371. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The bill passes, and we are on to House File 834.
They tried to make it sound like it was an advantage for Pete to do this.
We're going to have a little change up in plans here.
Do we need another one first? Okay.
Members, just we're going to be taking up House File 1326. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to walk through it as well, but put the bill in the shape that we'd like to proceed with it. I'd move the bill, I guess, first, and then I'd like to move the D2 once we've done that.
Okay, you are moving the A8 amendment.
First, I'm moving the bill itself, Madam Chair, into the General Register, please.
Okay.
And as soon as you're ready, I'll move the DE2.
Go ahead. You may proceed, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might, I'd move the DE2, and then I'd be happy to explain it once we've accepted that amendment.
Representative Atkins, you're moving the DE2 amendment to House File 1326.
I am, Madam Chair, and if we can vote on that so that I'm explaining the right bill. Unless
okay.
You,
oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm having troubles hearing you, Representative Atkins, so I apologize.
And maybe if
for
I
that.
Leaned into the microphone a little bit more, it might help too.
Thank you. Representative Atkins moves the DE2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Thank you.
Okay, we are on the DE2 amendment. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Virtually all of this should be familiar territory to you. What we did was we had kind of liquor day in here about a week ago. Since then, I've met with Chair Hoppe, with the interested parties, with all kinds of nice people, and we've tried to put a bill together that folks will agree on. I'm going to walk through it very quickly and then come back for questions. The only changes that you will see are relatively minor technical changes that I'll make sure to spend a little bit of extra time on so that they're not of any surprise to anybody. The first one, Section 1, and by the way, this is Mr. McCormick did an excellent summary, so I'll go through that rather rapidly with you, but the first section is the brewer taproom license that was placed into the bill. The second section is my bill with regard to bed and breakfast, no changes to that one. Section 3 is a slight change. There is a, at the airport, it would allow for licenses that are not in compact or contiguous spaces. It's just an area at the end of kind of a cul-de-sac at the airport, which we found out, they have an RFP right now to allow, I believe it's a bar restaurant, to go in there. Wouldn't be allowed under current law, so this would allow that restaurant to go in. We have folks here in the event that you have questions or concerns about it, but it's technical and not controversial. Number 4 is farm winery. This is Representative Scott's bill, by the way, to allow municipalities to issue temporary licenses to farm wineries for on sale at a county fair. Number 5 is Representative or Chairman Hoppe's bill that we probably should have done long ago regarding private colleges. Rather than make them come here every time they want to pass a liquor license, it allows them to do what everybody else does, which is go through their local governing body. Number 6 is licenses prohibited in certain areas. That's Representative Lanning's bill. You recall he came in to talk about what's happening in Moorhead, and it just draws a little bit more contiguous line on the map so that it's more clear to those folks that are looking to get liquor licenses. Section 7 is Representative Simon's bill to allow liquor stores to sell clothing with their name on it, and he was very finite in what he allowed for. That was the Firkin brothers or whatever it was that wanted to sell a shirt. Section 8 is White Bear Township's authority to issue liquor licenses. That's Representative McFarland's bill. And you'll recall White Bear Township is actually 12,000 people and is issuing liquor licenses next door. Made a great deal of sense. Section 9 is for Raceway Park, Representative Beard's bill that allows an on-sale license at Raceway Park in Shakopee issued by the city. Very specific, very set relative to that specific license. Section 10. Changes in status regarding a grandfather provision. That Representative Ruskowski, this is quite technical, is a city down there. Rochester rolled over 100,000 people, which puts it in a different class, which would have brought its number of liquor licenses down to a number that I think they've already issued more than that. This would place their liquor licenses at 26. I believe they have 24 with the ones that are currently under consideration. Gives them just a little bit of room to move with respect to that. finally, we missed something in the effective date for the, I believe it was Representative Vogel. Remember, he was in a hurry to pass the one for their ballpark. The effective date, I believe, may have been for August, and it should be immediately. That was the whole point of moving rapidly with that bill. And finally, Representative Mullery raised a good point regarding that particular provision in Willmar, and can't that apply in other places? And the answer is, yeah, maybe. And we wanted Mr. McCormick had some language where maybe we could take a little bit further look at that. The concern is that they sell 3-2 beer. We haven't had a hearing on that bill. That one, everything else that we've added to the bill has been pretty technical stuff. This one would, in fact, be substantive, and we're trying not to do that without having hearings and letting, if anybody's impacted by it, they would come in here and tell us if it's grinding their axe or whatever. We'd rather know that. So the point of the language that was drafted would allow for an interim study of that particular topic. Might make all the sense in the world. Probably does. but you just don't want to do stuff to people without at least giving them an opportunity to be heard about it. So we proposed doing an interim study with respect to that. That is the bill. I believe that there are a couple amendments that might be Representative Mullery's, but Madam Chair, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. Members, any questions for Representative Atkins? Representative Mullery.
Well, I guess not a question. I'll discuss it.
Are you going to move your amendment then, Representative Mullery? Okay. Which amendment are you?
Well, since the Section 12 is regarding Amendment A15, I'll move that one.
Representative Mullery moves A15. Representative Mullery, your amendment?
Basically, it's the same question I asked on the House floor on the Wilmer bill, is why aren't we giving this to others? And as I recall, I'm trying to think of the exact words. At that point, I think Chair Hoppe was going to carry the omnibus bill and said that we could have that in the omnibus bill. And so basically, it's just if somebody is entitled to it in one location, let's say Wilmer, I remember Representative Finstead used to be here, carried the Twin Stadium bill. He played town ball in not his hometown, but one right by Sleepy Eye down there. And so I guess at that point I didn't argue on the Wilmer one because Chair Hoppe had said, you know, we got the omnibus coming up and we can put it in there. So I guess I don't see why we're treating different ones in different ways. Town ball is, I think, great for the state everywhere, and so that's just why I think it's appropriate to put in here.
Okay.
We didn't do a study on the Wilmer one.
Representative Atkins?
Madam Chair, the reservation that I have, and I did mention this to Representative Mullery previously, is that with the Wilmer one, we actually had the bill before us, and it was publicly noticed. If folks in Wilmer or anywhere else wanted to come and speak against it, they had an opportunity to do that. It wasn't presented as the sort of thing, the kind of law that was going to apply to every single town ball, professional ball, whatever, all across the state of Minnesota. And Mr. McCormick reminded me that there's folks that are in the 3-2 beer. I don't like 3-2 beer, but there's businesses that are actually in the 3-2 beer business. And to, you know, just change it without an opportunity to even hear from them, I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad idea. I just don't like doing stuff to folks without giving them a shot at saying their piece. And like I say, we had inserted in the bill an opportunity to look at it in the interim, invite those folks in, see what they say, and maybe put it into the next omnibus bill that arises.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, maybe we could ask the over-powerful chair, what about hearing with a notice next week or something?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Atkins and Representative Mullery. I'm with you on this. I like this idea. I share Representative Atkins' concerns about 3-2 and noticing, and I'm a board member for the Chaska Cubs in the interest of full disclosure. We only ever sell 3-2 beer because that's all we have a license for, and that's all the city wants us to do. I go to a lot of other little town ballparks, and as far as I know, it's all 3-2, and nobody sells anything other than that. And I just don't know what the... I'm with you on the spirit of this, but I think maybe we'd be better off rather than the unintended consequences if we could study it or have a hearing sometime before the end of session or in the interim or maybe at the Cubs ballpark or something.
Okay. If Representative Mullery.
First of all, if Representative Hoppe's providing the free beer at the Cubs ballpark, then we definitely could have the right there. But I didn't think it changed anything from cities, but I'm certainly, you can have a hearing on it next week, that's fine.
Did you want to withdraw your amendment then, Representative Mullery?
If that's
way
to go.
Yeah, let's talk more about this, Representative Mullery and members. I think it is a good idea, but I think Representative Atkins is probably right. We should just make sure we're not let everybody know and we're not screwing things up for the 3-2 people and maybe cities.
Okay.
One question.
Representative Mullery?
For Mr. McCormick, doesn't the city still have control over it under this? Or
Mr. Chairman, the provision in the A15 is permissive, so a city could choose to still do a 3.2 license under your provision, but under so that change, you're right, the city still has control.
It's total.
Representative Mullery?
And Madam Chair, and Representative Hoppe, I don't know if you heard because he was talking to you, but it's still totally within the city control, but I have no problem if you want to have a hearing next week.
Maybe we'll check with the cities and, I don't know, amateur baseball and just see what we can, because I'm with you on the spirit of it. I think it's a good idea, but let's just check and make sure we have everything done 100% right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, members, we're back to the Representative Atkins, House File 1326. Are there any as amended, Representative Mullery?
Well, Madam Chair, again, and I know Chair Hoppe is a, I believe, graduate of St. John's. I don't know if I should mention it since I'm trying to get him to do something, but I went to St. Thomas for 2 years. And then transferred to the U. But I remember when I brought this up, I said I was pretty sure Minsky needed the same thing. They have, St. Thomas has like fundraisers for scholarships. St. John's has those. The Minsky institutions, they have foundations for scholarships for their kids. And that's, so right now we would be saying, okay, the private don't have to do hire the outside caterers, and yet Minsky would have to go through that extra expense. And at the time I brought it up, you said you were pretty sure they already did, and if not, you could put it in the omnibus. So that's why I think it's fair to be fair to everybody and not prefer one over the other.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mullery, and I'll defer to Representative Atkins on this as well, but I'm with you again. I think this is a good idea. My only concern would be, is Minsky okay with this? And if I don't want to do this and then screw things up for St. Cloud with St. Cloud State or Mankato or any of the other cities, it's fine with me. And Representative Mullery, maybe talk to people.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I talked to Minsky. They'd like it, but they don't want to create a big thing about it. And so they said basically if the chair is fine with it, but otherwise, they don't want to get into me fighting or anything about it. So that's the way I am on it. If it's okay, if you don't want it, I'm not going to fight over it.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mullery. I might well be fine with it, too. My bigger concern, Minsky is represented here. You know, they've got people that are here all the time. When we had this bill relative to St. Thomas a year ago, there was fireworks from the neighborhood around St. Thomas. And you'll recall that Representative Murphy actually withdrew the bill so that she could have an opportunity to visit further with the neighbors around St. Thomas. And that was all news to us. I mean, we're like, you know, it was moving swimmingly along and everybody supporting it. And then she got word that the neighbors were all upset about it. And she did the right thing. She withdrew the bill. She worked with them. And then she came back this year. She's a co-author on the bill. And they passed it. What my concern is have we talked to the neighbors around Mankato State and around St. Cloud and around UMD and around Morris and around all the Minsky campuses? My guess is that we probably haven't. So I'd suggest that we at least try that, or at least talk to the legislators from those individual areas and ask them if they have issues regarding this. Because I'd rather hear from them than get to the House floor and have Representative Lanning and Representative Morrow and all kinds of folks saying we never talked to them and now we're shoving something down their throat. There was never even a hearing and that kind of thing. That's why I'm nervous about it, Representative Mullery. Might be a great idea, but I'd rather have a hearing.
Representative
Madam
Mullery.
Chair and Representative Atkins, I don't think that the neighbors around every private college in the state were asked about this or the bill. I'm pretty sure of that.
Actually,
Representative,
they were.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I talked with Mr. McMahon, and it was his impression that most of the campuses were making their community outreach folks, that they really had taken steps to try to make people aware of it, and that there had not, to his knowledge, been any pushback from the neighbors, which was good. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have had it in the bill. But I don't think the Minsky, I know the Minsky campuses have not had that opportunity.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, since we have a new author for the bill from what we had when it was when the issue came up in committee, I don't think Minsky wants to fight, and so if Representative Atkins doesn't want it in there, I'm not going to, I'm going to withdraw the amendment because apparently he's got more power now on this bill than the chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mullery. Representative Atkins, any closing comments, or is there anybody from the audience that wishes to speak to this bill? Okay.
Madam Chair, I have no closing comments. I'd just be happy to take any, if there's any additional questions or any additional input. The omnibus liquor bill is always kind of a work in progress, and if there's items that arise or concerns that arise, please catch us. My thanks to Representative or Chairman Hoppe and the authors of the bill for allowing me to be their vessel carrying the water on the omnibus, or the, carrying the liquor, I guess, Madam Chair, on the omnibus liquor bill.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, and just a question for the author. And in the Senate liquor bill, there's a position on the university drinking, and they want to open it up again to the wealthiest Minnesotans being able to drink, and not to everybody. And I was just wondering if you intend to hold the position that was passed so strongly bipartisan last year and then negotiated through the conference committee last year, that would offer, was kind of a peace offering to the youth, that offered drinking in the suites plus 30% of the stadium would be able to have drinking. The average, 30% of the average person, you know, the people down outside the suites. I just wonder if you intend to, if you were indeed put on the conference committee, that maybe, I'm guessing Chair Hoppe would be, and you, that you would make an effort to hold the House position on that.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hoppe, no, or Representative Lilly, I thought I'd just abandon it, just give in. Whatever the House position is, and it has been for, I think most of folks have been through this. To the new folks, this has been a very strongly held House position that we have believed, and we'll see how the omnibus bill goes on the floor. I don't want to exclude the new members. They may have a different point of view, but to date, a very strongly held position that since taxpayers help pay for this stadium, that the average guy in, or average gal in the regular seats ought to have an opportunity to buy a beer, or, just like the folks in the suites. And it's been, I believe, a very strongly held bipartisan position. We'll see. There may be. I know that there's been a bill moving through the Senate. It hasn't really gained a whole lot of traction in the House. You never know what happens on the House floor, but I'll defend whatever the House position is, Representative Lilly.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, thank you. And my Goldie thanks you.
I guess there are props allowed in committee.
That's why I brought it here.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to ask Representative Atkins a question about, even though I withdrew my amendment, do you understand that all we're doing is that costing them extra money because they already can get the license on a one-day basis all the time? They just have to keep buying it over and over and getting and paying extra for caterers. So it doesn't affect whether or not they're having the events or whether there's going to be liquor at them. The same exact amount of liquor is going to be there.
Represent,
so we're just costing Madam colleges Chair, or the scholarships for students extra money by that.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, thank you for the concern. I'm not necessarily opposed to your proposal. I just think that we ought to have hearings on things that make substantive changes in Minnesota law.
Okay.
Thank you.
With that, Madam Members, we are on House File 1326. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes and goes to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Members.
House File 834 is up. Representative Hoppe, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and members, this is the second PEEP bill on the agenda. House File 834, I'd like to move that, and I'm not sure where we're sending it. I don't have the note.
HHS
reform. To HHS reform, thank you. With that, I know the hour's getting late, and we'll try to move quickly. And members, I appreciate your attention at this late hour, and I'll turn it over to testifiers.
Please state your name for the record and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Catherine Kvitt, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The council is a trade association that represents the seven nonprofit health plans in Minnesota. And I'm just passing out a graph that shows where Minnesotans get their health insurance here in Minnesota. You've seen this before, so I'm not going to describe it for you, but the most important point to take away from this pie chart is that 25% of the pie chart is represented by the fully insured market. That is the portion of the market that state law can regulate, that the state can assess, put assessments on, and impose taxes on. The rest of the marketplace, they cannot. And that's important because House File 834 is a bill about fairness. And we support this legislation to ensure fairness across the fully insured market and the state health insurance programs such as PEEP. As you have heard earlier, this is because PEEP is not subject to the premium taxes and the MSHA assessment that is required of commercial plans. So moving all teachers and other public employees to PEEP will create losses in the general fund. This will create an even bigger financial burden on individuals and small businesses that purchase coverage in the fully insured market. Again, the MSHA assessment only applies to the 25% of the market. As people jump out of that market into PEEP or the fully the self-funded market, the cost of MSHA grows on an ever-shrinking portion of the market. The rising cost of health care, as you know, is a real issue for small employers, and shifting more of the cost to them can have real consequences. In fact, the Department of Health reported that in 2009, more than 42,000 people lost small group coverage. That's groups of 2 to 50 employees, bringing the total drop in small group coverage to 82,600 people since 2004. This is a real issue. The costs are going up as more and more people move to self-insure, or in what we're talking about here today, groups moving out to into the PEEP market. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that according to an independent analysis, if all school employees were to move out of the fully insured market into PEEP, the impact for the biennium shows a reduction of tax revenue potentially to the general fund of between $32 and $35 million and a shift of $41 to $50 million in MSHA costs from government plans to people remaining in the fully insured market. So what this bill does is it requires a level playing field so that all school districts and other municipalities will have the same consumer protections and pay the same taxes and assessments as they were when they were in the fully insured market. And with that, we urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Davids, I think, had a question for you. If you,
thank you, Madam Chair. And to Mr. Pender, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to get PEEP to pay their MSHA, to pay MSHA assessment.
Is PEEP an ERISA plan currently?
Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, no, PEEP is a government plan.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, the service co-ops that don't pay the MSHR assessments, are they self-funded ERISA plans, or what are they?
Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, they are a self-funded, trying to think of the right term. They're a self-funded group entity, I guess I'd say.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Pender, so service co-ops technically are not ERISA plans, so we could put the MSHA assessment on service co-op plans also. This bill doesn't do that, but we could do that.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I think that's correct.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be talking to Mr. Pender about an amendment.
Okay. Ms. Bodine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Bodine with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and you've heard me testify before in terms of this the fully insured market, so I will also spare some testimony and not repeat what Ms. Commit mentioned, but the Minnesota Chamber supports this bill. The Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, MCHA, the assessment for the state's high-risk pool is currently only paid by that fully insured market. And as you may know, it's declined substantially, and just in the last 10 years, it's declined by 10%. So it went from 35% to today, 25%. This is a huge issue for, we're seeing employers drop insurance for their employees. They're exiting the market. As you've heard me testify before in the committee, health insurance is a recruiting tool, it's a retention tool. As your businesses want to continue to grow and expand in your districts, it's important that they are able to offer insurance most often. And we really believe that as more people move to PEEP, the MCHA assessment will become a further deterrent for businesses to offer insurance, as they will be sharing a disproportionate amount of the MCHA assessment. And the real issue here is when the state exempts itself from these types of taxes, we believe it creates an unlevel playing field for businesses. They're requiring businesses to pay these types of taxes, but they're exempting them, the state programs, from paying the same taxes. So we do thank Chairman Hoppe for bringing this bill forward, and we encourage your support. I'll answer any questions if there are.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Commit, in her opening comments, said this bill is about fairness, so that PEEP also has to pay the MSHA assessment, and that might be fine. But then would the Chamber or the Council of Health Plans also support, since so many people are leaving the fully insured and going into ERISA self-funded plans, would you then support, either of you, Ms. Commit, just as a matter of fairness, amending to put service co-ops so that they're paying the MSHA assessment too, because that pool is dwindling, it's very important that we keep money in there. Would you then support adding the service co-ops in? Could the same argument be made that we need to do that?
Ms. Commit.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I don't know the answer to that question because I haven't checked with my members, so we don't have a position on that. However, I would say that one thing that we would support is we'd like to see the base broadened so that those who are paying the MCHA assessment, the base would be broadened to include, we think it should include the self-funded market, but in particular, which we can't do because of federal ERISA,
yeah.
But in particular, the state of Minnesota itself is exempt from the MCHA assessment. And so all of you who are covered by CGIP, you have an advantage. There's a bit of an advantage because the state of Minnesota itself is exempt from paying the MCHA assessment. The one comment that I should have made at the beginning was that this bill deals with certain cost advantages provided by state law that are afforded to PEEP compared to products offered in the private market. And what happens, what this is doing is it's creating a price advantage for groups to seek coverage through PEEP. And that is harming the private market.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you support an amendment to add the service co-ops in and CGIP in? Because I agree. I mean, we know
Mr. Pender and I go way back on, or at least me trying to get ERISA plans in for the MSHA assessment and doing many, many things, because that's just pure craziness that we don't. But would you support an amendment to put CGIP in and the co-ops? Because if your argument, why are you just picking out PEEP here? Why just PEEP? I mean, they're leaving the co-ops, they're leaving some, the state employees, but wouldn't it make sense to have everybody play ball here? Because that would lower the price for the fully insured market, because now you got CGIP in, you've got the co-ops in, and you've got PEEP in. So if we're talking about fairness, wouldn't it be fair to put them all in? The ones that we can control? We can't control the ERISA plan.
Ms. Commit.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, again, I don't know what our position is on service co-ops, so I can't address that. However, your comment about the about the state paying the MSHA assessment, we would support an amendment to do that. However, I think that will create a fiscal note for you. And this bill will have a fiscal note, because then the state's going to have to pay that, and that's going to cost more. So that would create a problem. So I wouldn't support that for this bill, but I think that's a very fine idea that perhaps we should bring forward and have a bigger discussion about that.
Well, Madam Chair, and Ms. Schmidt, I'll bet if I had an amendment to put the co-ops in there, I bet you'd have a position pretty quick on it.
Ms. Commit.
Madam Chair, our preference is to move the bill as is, Representative Davids, and I'm not prepared to talk about what the, you know, what our position is on the service co-ops. It's really not my organization's issue, but what we do support is to make sure that as health plans who are competing in the private market, and as entities look at what's available through PEEP and what's available in the private market, we want to be sure that that everybody has the same is playing on on the level playing field. That's where it's an issue of fairness.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Commit, I would humbly suggest that you get prepared on those two questions, because I don't understand why we're, and you know, I'm going to support the chairman's bill tonight. It sure sounds like it, doesn't it? I'm going to support the chairman's bill tonight because I said I would. Okay, but please be prepared for the House floor for co-ops coming in. Maybe not CGIP, because I might have trouble in tax committee figuring that one out. But if it's truly a matter of fairness, let's talk about fairness, because what this bill really doesn't look fair to me. When you're just taking PEEP and not the co-ops and not looking at CGIP. And I know you're here for the bill that's here before us. I understand that. But we've got some more discussions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just we're tossing out a number of different acronyms and things here, and I think it's important that we maybe just step back and define for new members, myself included, some of the terms. And I guess I'll start on some of the things that I'm familiar with. What we're talking about with MCHA, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, is the safety net that we have here in the state of Minnesota if individuals can't get insurance through the standard market. And there's an upcharge in premiums, but you're guaranteed issue of health insurance policies here in the state of Minnesota, which is a good thing. We've been doing that for some 30, almost 40 years here in the state of Minnesota. The question that I guess I have on this is, if we start moving people from the private market where MSHA is being paid to a plan where, which is what the bill addresses today, the idea of PEEP, there is a competitive disadvantage there. But I guess I'd like to know more, and maybe Representative Davids or someone else can help me with, what is CGIP? How does it work? Who's there? That's the one I need some help with before I follow up with a question.
Mr. Pender, can you help us out?
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, CGIP is the plan administered by MMB that provides health coverage for state employees and legislators.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I suspect that that's what it was, but I wanted confirmation on that, because also under MSHA, the state of Minnesota is also the one that has to true up every year under if there's not enough money that's collected from private premiums for that, Minnesota has to, the state has to true that up. By putting this group of employees in, wouldn't we be ending up paying twice? once where we pay it, and then once we'd have to true up at the end of the fiscal cycle.
Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and Representative Driscoll, MCHA's deficits, if you call them that, are funded by assessing MCHA's members, so the state doesn't put any money into MCHA normally. So that's that. So this would be an additional. This would be a new thing of the state paying an assessment on the health insurance it's providing.
Representative Driscoll.
Just another follow-up on that. If we, when we say that we assess that back to the carriers, if there is shortfalls, there could be an increase in the amount of money that we would assess back to those full-service carriers that are qualified or required to pay MCHA.
Mr. Pender.
Thus, exacerbating the gap that I'm talking about here this evening.
All right, Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess since Representative Davis seems to be throwing the net everywhere, is there anybody else that we can start taxing here under the Davis plan? That group, the mutuals, the former representative, is his name Marcus Marsh, represents, are they presently taxed? Can they be? I'm asking Mr. Pender, can we tax... somehow tax or charge MinCare for MCHA? I mean, I don't know where Representative David's big net is going. And so I just thought we should ponder where he can go after, other than I know the ERISA plans he can't go after. But I don't even know. Maybe he can get Medicare. Who knows?
Mr. Pender, can you respond to Representative Mallory?
Madam Chair, Representative Mallory, the companies former Representative Marcus Marsh represents are property and casualty companies, so they're not involved in health insurance.
Okay. What about any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I realize the hour is getting late, and I appreciate everybody's patience. And I think there are a lot of good questions here that maybe we should have another larger hearing on that's greater in scope than the little teeny bill in front of us.
Okay. Okay. All right. With that, is there any other testifiers, people that wishing to speak in favor or opposed? Ms. Alschweiger?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm thankful, actually, that you did these bills together, because it significantly reduces the amount of time I need to talk about this. That's a good thing. Because the school employees are going out for bids for PEEP, we believe this is why this bill is here. We believe this bill will actually make the playing field less level for our school employees. And Representative Davids talked about, who are we going after here? This is a direct result of the school employees going out. The school employees that go into PEEP, if Representative Hoppe's bill does not pass the other one, they would then be required to pay the premium tax and the MCHA. And if you look at this document, I think I can illustrate how it is not leveling the playing field, because this large gray pie piece at the bottom shows all of the individuals who are not paying MCHA or the premium tax. And if you carved out a tiny, tiny little slice that would be PEEP, they are not paying premium tax or MCHA. And then you take a little tiny slice of that pie, they would be the only ones in this whole gray area that would be paying premium tax and MCHA. Do not be fooled. This is not leveling the playing field. I do want you to know that when we had the statewide health insurance bill, because we are concerned about making sure people have access to health care, we actually put in our statewide health insurance bill that the school employees would pay MCHA and premium tax. Why? Probably because school employees are really good people and we care about everybody else. But now when we're at a point
when we're trying to create some competition and we see some of the behaviors on the other side trying to limit our competition, here's one more reason why it's more would be more difficult to go into PEEP. And I think, you know, Representative Davids has an idea. Maybe the service co-ops, the people in the service co-op insurance program should pay those. Otherwise, how are we ever going to have a level playing field? So we understand Representative Hoppe's intent. In 2014, when the federal health care is in place, MTA really won't be needed anymore because we won't. Everybody will have access to health care. Pre-existing conditions won't exist. So there are some things to consider, and I think Representative Hoppe is right that this is a much bigger discussion than this bill. But these are two bills that you have before us that are trying to stop school employees from getting competitive bids. Our teachers don't make that much money. Some of our teachers are given bids of $28,000 and $33,000 for family insurance premiums. It is not unheard of to have $12,000 or $18,000 insurance premiums for family. So we encourage you not to support this bill. Thank you.
Members, any questions for Ms. Elsweger or Ms. Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Elsweger and I had the opportunity to debate this earlier because it was in front of government operations. But before she came to us in government operations, Representative Lanning was also before us about a week earlier visiting with us, and he was carrying a bill that would bring the nonprofit service groups into this, some of the other quasi-social service groups, because they're having some of the same difficulties that Ms. Elsweger is talking about today. I think what one of the concerns I shared with the chair when we were looking at this bill is all of a sudden we've got something that's pretty balanced, and if all of a sudden we get a big rush in here, we're going to have things that are going to be out of balance right now. And so I don't want you to think that this is a target on the back of the members of your organization or on teachers. We've got a whole lot of people who were in a week or so earlier in government operations who wanted to get in, who had the same kinds of things. I see a small group of insureds in here and customers ballooning very quickly, and we need to be very, very, move very, very judiciously and cautiously forward to make sure that we don't end up busting the whole thing for everybody who's in and everybody who wants to be in.
Ms. Elsweger?
Representative O'Driscoll, I understand exactly what you're saying. I also want you to think a little bit broader and a little more long-term. We have 6 school districts that don't have health insurance. We have employees who it's just too expensive to buy insurance. We have school employee or teacher groups that are actually realizing that it is cheaper for them to go to MCHA than it is to get some of the insurance from the service co-ops or maybe other providers. Until we fix the school employee program, we are going to end up increasing the cost to MCHA. This is a serious problem. I really ask you, even in Minneapolis, I ask you to talk to your school employees, ask them what their insurance premiums are, their co-pays, ask them about their benefits. We have a serious problem, and we've been here trying to fix this issue. We tried to do it. Now we're trying to do it again with the PEEP bids, voluntary, competitive. This is one more difficulty in trying to get that done. And if you've got some ideas, Representative O'Driscoll or anybody, we would love to talk about it. But we want it to be fair, transparent, and with accountability. We're not looking for more than our share. Our teachers can't afford health insurance. We have school employees that write checks after they get they write checks to the school district to pay for the health insurance because they don't make enough to cover the health insurance premium.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I promise this will be the last comment that I have on this topic for the evening, but I will agree wholeheartedly with most, if not all, of the points that you raised. because they're the exact same things that Maury Lanning, Representative Lanning, and the people he had testifying were offering for us in another whole group of people that are out there. And so my word of caution again is we have to make sure that we don't put more people into a system and break that system so that people don't have insurance. Because I the scales can shift very, very quickly on this. And that is probably the number one benefit that people look for these days over anything because of the cost of health insurance and the need to have something.
Members, any other questions at all? Representative Hoppe, any closing remarks?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you all for your patience and for your support.
Okay. Members, we are on House File 834. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The bill passes and goes to the HHS reform.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And we are adjourned.